Hey, it's Daniel Tardy. Thanks for listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast. Did you know that the lessons taught by Dave in this podcast are a part of our Entree Leadership Master Series event? Join us at our next event to hear the entire Entree Leadership curriculum in person. This is a special edition at our office in Nashville, Tennessee, May 5th through the 11th. To get more details or to register, give us a call at 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223. Or check out the Master Series event at entreeleadership.com.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is a place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, Dave describes why the entrepreneurial spirit or mentality is important to cultivate in yourself and your company. That's right. It's not just for you. Your team needs to understand this as well. We also have a great interview with Chris Guillebeau, who is the author of the best-selling book, $100 Startup. Now, at the end of the podcast, I want you to keep listening. Well, I always want you to keep listening, but especially today, because we're going to have a survey. We want to know from you. We want to know what you think about the guests. We want to know who you'd like to have on board. We'd like to know how often you'd like to hear the podcast, all that kind of information. So we're going to be talking about that at the end of the podcast, as well as somebody is going to win a signed copy of Entree Leadership just for filling out the survey. Now, who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. Last episode, we talked to Robin Robbins about marketing. And let me say, I know my Twitter and LinkedIn and all that stuff just blew up from comments. I got a lot of stuff. People came to the website and gave a lot of information, a lot of comments. So I'm glad that you guys enjoyed that. Today, we hear about the entree in entree leadership. What does that mean? Entree leadership is actually a word we made up. I know, you're surprised. It's the combination of entrepreneurship and leadership. Today, you're going to understand why that's important. Maintaining an entrepreneurial mindset is so critical to the success of your business that we have put it in at the core of what we teach. We don't just have leaders here. We don't just have entrepreneurs here. We have a combination of the two, and that is why we are so successful. So here is Dave Ramsey talking about the entrepreneurial spirit.
When I think about leaders, I also want entrepreneurs. I want that entrepreneurial thing going on. If you don't have an entrepreneurial bone in your body, it's going to dry up. The juice is going to leave the building, and the marketplace will run past you at the speed of Twitter. It's going to happen. Something's going to change. Oh, it already did while I said that. You've got to be entrepreneurial to survive, which means you've got to be constantly thinking, changing. And I thought, you know what? If I'm going to grow a business, I need a bunch of entrepreneurs. And then I went, oh, no, I don't either. Oh, God. A whole room full of these people. That'd be like trying to nail Jell-O to a tree. Can you imagine if your whole business was full of them? You would just shoot yourself. I mean, oh, man. And yet you've got to have that energy in there, don't you? You've got to have that creativity. You've got to have that zest, that willing to pay a price to win, that inquisitive nature. And let me just tell you, if you want a bunch of yes people, a bunch of butt kissers, don't hire these people. Because they think you're wrong just because they didn't think of it. You need them on your team. They will constantly, the phrase we overuse around our place is, I want to push back on that a little bit. I'm going to push back. Which means I'm about to argue with you because I think you're wrong. That's what that means. And, you know, I'm going to push back on that. I don't like you. I'm going to push back. You need to rethink that. And I don't really want to rethink it. I own the place. You know? And yet I do often rethink it because these are the people you have to have. They're the ones that love the cause just a tiny bit more than they love you. Because they're going for it with you. They're going to fight. They're going to scrap. They're going to pray. They're going to bandage the wounds. They're going to be there with you. They're going to do what it takes to win. They're going to change and mold and shift with the thing. And you got to have them inside the organization. You got to have them. And so I think we need leaders. And I think we need entrepreneurs. And what I decided I wanted to do was to grow the two together, entree leaders. Entrepreneurs and leaders combined.
Sometimes as entrepreneurs, we start out with an entrepreneurial spirit. We start out with an entrepreneurial mindset. And unfortunately, the day-to-day, the daily grind, the tasks, the to-do list, the problems, all the things that pop up get us to focus more on things, get us more focusing on issues instead of thinking entrepreneurial. No matter what, if you want to continue to be successful, if you want to continue to grow, you must continue to think like an entrepreneur. Folks, some of you out there are going, but I'm not. I'm just a team member. Stop thinking like a team member. Start thinking like an entrepreneur. If you want to know who Chris Licurdo wants to hire, I want to hire somebody who thinks like an entrepreneur. Yeah, for your admin position, abso-stinking-lutely. Every single time. I don't want you to come in and do a JLB. Somebody gave me a hard time on Twitter because I make the comment, I don't hire anybody who can do the job. If in an interview you say to me, oh, I can do that, forget it. It's over. I want somebody who's like, I so want to attack that and I want to make that happen and I will do that for you. That's what I'm looking for. You need to keep that as well. You need to make sure you don't get lost in the day-to-day and lose that entrepreneurial mindset that brought you to where you are. All right. Switching gears, we have got a great interview with Chris Guillebeau. He is the New York Times best-selling author of the book, The $100 Startup. I know a lot of you have already read that book. I've gotten a lot of comments on the blog about it as well. He's also the author of a bunch of other stuff, but today we're going to focus on The $100 Startup. This is a book where Chris shows you how to lead a life of adventure, meaning, and purpose, and earn a good living. So please welcome to the show, Chris Guillebeau. Chris, thank you for coming on and doing the Entree Leadership Podcast.
Hey, Chris. Thanks so much for having me. It's a big honor.
This is an exciting one because, one, we've got, you know, all entrepreneurs out there listening, a bunch of leaders who want to be entrepreneurs. I know you've been doing an incredible job meeting a bunch of these folks, but we've got so many of them listening today. Let's start out by saying, where did you get the idea? Because the idea behind the $100 Startup is just phenomenal. Where did that come from?
You know, I can't take too much credit for it myself. The idea for the $100 Startup came from hearing other people's stories. I did a previous book tour for my first book, and I went to all 50 states and every province in Canada. And all along the way, I kept meeting really fascinating, remarkable people who had all started successful businesses without spending a lot of money, without going into debt. Almost none of them had been to business school. Most of them didn't have an entrepreneurship or business background, but they had all found a way to make a good living by doing something that they loved, by kind of focusing in on their skill and passion, but not staying with their skill and passion, finding a way to make that valuable and interesting to other people. So I just kept meeting all these fun people, and I thought, like, I would love to be able to tell their story and not only tell their story, but talk about how other people can do it too. So the idea really was kind of organic. And then eventually we created a, you know, scientific study where we really went out and taught to hear more stories and to really look at the data and to get into the details of it. But the inspiration kind of came from them.
Now, you've got a phenomenal story of what you've been able to do. I mean, you kind of have, for many of us, you were living the great life. You travel all over the world. You've met a bunch of people all over the world. Kind of tell about that and you know, what it's been like for you to get out there in touring all these different nations and learning about entrepreneurs.
Oh, that's kind of you to say. I feel very fortunate I can do what I do. About 10 years ago, you know, maybe a little bit more than 10 years now, after 9/11, I was depressed like a lot of other people and just trying to find my place in the world and trying to find a way to help in some way. And my wife and I ended up moving to West Africa for about 4 years, and we were volunteering for a medical charity over there. And that was just the greatest experience of our lives. We spent a year in Sierra Leone. We spent a year in Liberia and a couple of years in other West African countries. And that experience was just transformative. It gave me a lot of confidence of being able to, you know, travel in different situations, to do unconventional work. I kind of paid the bills by moonlighting, working with clients and customers back in the U.S. And then when we moved back to the States, I just kept traveling. I was doing a grad school program at the time, and then during every school break, I would go overseas for a couple of weeks. And then eventually I had this goal to visit every country in the world, and that's what I've been working on for the past 7 years. while I've been writing books and traveling and meeting people. So it's kind of a thing that just also came about organically, but after a while it became more strategic as I started thinking about, you know, what I hope to do, what I hope to accomplish through it.
Mm, I love it. That's got to be a blast. In the beginning of the book, never before have so many possibilities have come together at the right place at the right time to start a business. That's one of the first things that you talk about. What advice do you have for our listeners that have a great idea or a business but don't know how to get started?
You know, the first advice I would give is that, you know, just about everyone has some kind of business idea. But for whatever reason, a lot of people don't take action on it. I think there's a lot of reasons why that is. But I think one of them is that we tend to make things more complicated than they need to be. And for a long time, you know, the traditional method of starting a business, there were a lot of steps to it. And starting a business almost always involved some kind of debt, or at least some kind of investment. You had to beg for money one way or another, whether it was from the bank, whether it was from your friends or family, putting on your credit card or whatever. But these days, as you said, there never before had there been so many different opportunities. Most of the people that we talk to, you know, started their business with less than $1,000. Most of them did it with less than $100. And they started quickly. They started within 30 days. So the old way was kind of, you know, take forever, months or years writing a business plan that no one's ever going to read or follow, figure out how to get this money, you know, all for an unproven concept. And so what I recommend is the sooner the better, you know, start within 30 days, don't spend a lot of money, get your idea out there, see what, you know, see what the response is, and then kind of adapt from there. So, you know, what I say is that there's only three characteristics to a business. It's a product or a service, it's a group of people willing to pay for it, and a means of getting paid. I mean, that's really all you need, and then you can make it more complicated after that. But I encourage people to focus, you know, first and foremost on those three things. You know, get the product or service, figure out who is going to purchase it, and then make sure you have some means of receiving that payment. And then let's see what we can do after that.
I love that because there are so many people that come to me all the time and they're asking the questions. Like I had one guy who said, you know, where do I go and find you know, capital, venture capitalist money. Where do I go?
Right.
If I don't want to get a loan and I'll, you know, which apparently for some reason people think if they're not going to get a loan, then venture capital must obviously be just free cash.
Right.
You know, how do I do this? Cause I've got this big idea that I want to do and I'll grow this thing. And one guy came to me one time and he said, listen, I want to start this type of restaurant. It was a specific type of restaurant. It had a great mission behind it, all that kind of fun stuff. And he's like, but I need to get the money. I'm like, no, you don't. Why don't you start out tiny? Now you're not talking about an internet startup. You're not talking about a big, huge thing. You're talking about small stuff. So what does that look like for the guy who wants to eventually end up in the restaurant business or, you know, something to that effect? What does it look like starting small?
You know, what I'm essentially talking about is freedom. You know, when we talked to all these different people, and it ended up being about 1,500 people from all over the world, you know, who had all created these successful businesses. All the businesses made at least $50,000 a year. Many of them did much more than that, but $50,000 a year was the base level. And, you know, what I heard over and over and over was that the primary motivation for doing this was freedom and independence. And I want to do something for myself. I want to not have a boss. I want to create security for my family. You know, I want to create an asset. You know, I want to have ownership of that. I mean, that was kind of the base desire that I heard from almost everyone. And there were some people who wanted to build, you know, bigger companies, and that's great. And so I think at some point maybe there's a transition that occurs. You know, if someone is starting small and they begin to achieve some success, after a certain point, you know, they have to make some decisions. And at that point, you know, one valid decision is, let's stay small. Let's deliberately stay small, but this is all about our own freedom and a lifestyle business, and we make a good living, then we don't necessarily need to get bigger. But other people can choose, you know, this is going well, and maybe we do want to, you know, employ some folks. Maybe we do want to create something bigger. And so, you know, I guess at that point, that's when you start evaluating, you know, okay, how do I create, you know, the restaurant or the chain of restaurants or whatever. But I think it's a good place to be in. You know, it's a good problem to have, and I guess I'm more focused on getting people to that point where they can make that decision. You know,
mm-hmm.
Someone asked me on book tour recently, because you know the book is all about how to make $50,000, $100,000 a year, or, you know, something in that range. And someone asked me, they said, "Well, when are you going to write the book that tells people how to make $1 million a year?" You know, and I said, "Well, you know, that's great. If that's, you know, nice work if you can get it, But what can you do with $1 million a year that you can't do with $100,000 a year?
Right.
You know, you could buy property. I mean, I'm sure there's things you can do, but really, like, you know, most people that I talk to, they'd be thrilled with being able to make a good living, you know, doing something that they love. And then if they get to that point where they want to scale, well, that's a good problem to have.
Well, and I think if you can grow a business from $100 to $50,000, obviously something's working. And so it's not a matter of, you know, if you wrote the book of how to go to $1 million, then people would buy that and fail miserably as opposed to learning how to start it. Mm-hmm. You can take it from right. 50,000 to $1 million. That's a separate thing. But yeah, I think the focus is on actually getting out there and doing something. And you, right. you talk about, I love the fact that you talk about, you've got to have something that people want. You've got to connect with people. Oftentimes, a lot of people have a passion for something or a certain idea, but they fail to make sure that it connects with people. What can they do to make sure that they're doing that?
Well, this point is absolutely critical. So I'm glad you mentioned this here early on, because as you said, there's all kinds of things you can be passionate about that you can love to do that are all fine and well, but they're essentially your hobby. You know, there's something you like to do, and that's great, but that doesn't mean other people are going to come along and pay for it. So what I feel is missing from this whole conversation often about follow your passion, you know, is the connection to value. And value, essentially, it's one of those words that's always kind of thrown around without really defining it. But the way I look at it, value just means helping people. Mm-hmm. You know, value means providing something that is useful, you know, interesting, something that makes a difference in someone's life. So when I think about passion, you know, I used to be very passionate about playing video games. And that was great, but no one came along and paid me money to do so.
Not a whole lot of money in that.
Unfortunately, I never got a check for, you know, playing Halo or whatever on my Xbox. You know, and then I started traveling a lot, and I was also really passionate about travel. And I started a blog writing about my travels, and some people were interested. I had lots of readers, but no one came along and, you know, wanted to fund my travel, because that was something that was fundamentally about me. But then eventually I figured out, you know, okay, I can actually create some products, you know, to help other people travel. I can help other people with their frequent flyer miles, or, you know, what I call travel hacking, visiting all these different countries. When I started focusing externally, that's when I really created value in my business. So I, you know, encourage people to think about the same thing. Okay, what are you passionate about that also, you know, has this connection to something that can be made valuable, can be made interesting to other people? The more you focus on that, that question of convergence, that's ultimately where most of the successful business models that we saw, you know, would be found, not something that was strictly a passion of your own.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have some steps on the marketing side of this, because once you've got this idea, you've got this passion, you believe that people want it. I see people fail all the time at the marketing side. They've got the idea, but they have no clue how to get this out to people. How do they make sure that their idea is actually marketable?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm a big fan of what I call hustling. And hustling, as I define it, is just simply connecting with people. And, you know, whenever I create a new product or offer, whenever I started the blog for the first time, or, you know, wrote the first book, you know, a lot of people think they don't know anyone. They're like, I don't know anyone who can, you know, help me get the word out about this, or I don't know any famous people or anything like that. But, you know, I didn't start by knowing any famous people either. But I knew, you know, colleagues. I knew people I had gone to school with, the people I had worked overseas with, you know. So when I first started putting my project together, I would write to all of them, you know, individual messages. I'm not trying to spam everyone. I'm just, you know, sending updates and saying, hey, I'm putting this project together, and if you'd love to be a part, I would love for you to be a part of it. If you can help me, that'd be great. If not, you know, no problem. I'll never bother you again. But I just started with a few people, and, you know, then I had a few readers. And when I started creating products, and I had a few customers, you know, not a lot, but I had a few. And my philosophy is all about, you know, again, that question of value, about actually creating something that's very meaningful and valuable. And when you have a few customers, you get your first customer, that's a huge deal. You know, treat that customer like the most important person in the world, because they are. Ultimately, that customer is what's going to lead to, you know, more customers and hopefully more expansion, more products and services, or whatever it is that you're trying to create. So when I mentioned hustling in the beginning, I try to spend about half my time creating things, you know, whether it's creating things for my business or writing books or blog posts or anything like that, and then the other half of the time connecting with people. And so I think of marketing essentially as connecting, as, you know, how can I get the word out about my stuff, but also how can I be available? How can I, you know, answer emails with people, with questions that people have? How can I respond to comments? How can I be active in social media? But again, hopefully in a somewhat organic way, not a necessarily, you know, I'm going to spend 30 minutes on Twitter, that kind of thing, but how can I do whatever I can to get the word out in a way that's, in a way that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I love what you say. You say it's easier to sell to someone who knows they have a problem that needs a solution than it is to persuade someone who that they have a problem that they need a solution on.
Right. It's essentially the difference between evangelism and recruitment. Like, if you are an evangelist, that's a hard sell because you're going to have to knock on a lot of doors. You know, you're like the vacuum cleaner salesman, I think I said in the book. You know, you could be a successful vacuum cleaner salesman, but you're going to experience a great deal of rejection.
Oh, yeah.
And that just doesn't sound very interesting, especially with all the opportunities we have today. Whereas when you're in the recruitment business, you're just kind of putting your message out and you're putting this offer out. If you would like to engage with it, you know, then please come and participate. And I find that so much easier and just so much more refreshing.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, one of the things that we love is that you definitely encourage folks to not go into debt to start their business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Most people don't realize that 60% of businesses start on less than $5,000. 60%, which is huge. People don't. They don't understand that concept. You're saying, hey, don't do this. Instead, invest with sweat equity. What freedom does starting out as a solopreneur give you when you're launching a business idea?
It gives you complete freedom. It gives you complete freedom because you're not beholden to anyone else. You know, one, you're not beholden to investors or to the bank or to your grandma whose money you borrow from, you know, or anything like that. You know, but then also, you're not, you know, I mentioned that word imperative before. It's kind of a fancy word, like it just means being forced into something. You know, if you have debt of any kind, I know your listeners will relate to this, then you're kind of forced into making certain actions. And, you know, not every decision path is open to you because of this debt and because of these choices. And so if you start the business, you know, without that, with the sweat equity, you know, without the debt, then you're also not beholden to kind of continue down that path if it's not working out. You know, I always hear these statistics about the number of businesses that fail, and it's always like presented in this very ominous tone. It's like, you know, it always changes, but it's like the 50% of businesses, you know, will not be, you know, operating 5 years from now or something. And I think, well, that just sounds so depressing, but I think what people don't realize is most entrepreneurs are going to operate more than one business in their lifetime.
Right.
Maybe they just, you know, changed it up. You know, it doesn't mean that everything that starts and closes as a failure. Sometimes, you know, there are businesses that I operated for a while, and then I just, you know, changed to do something else. So because I didn't have debt, I had that freedom, you know, to be able to make those choices. So definitely, you know, the less debt, the better. In fact, almost everyone that we looked at in the whole study, you know, bootstrapped or did it on their own one way or another.
And I think that you have to understand the only thing you're losing is time. If you've put some time into it, it's just like anything else. You lost $100 in some time, so really, you know, and you got the chance to see if it was something that you would love and something you would enjoy doing. In this age of Twitter, in this age of social media, it's important to be able to articulate your project or business's mission clearly and succinctly. You encourage people to write a 140-character mission statement. Can you walk us through what that should include and why so short?
You know, I think why so short, you mentioned it right there in this age of Twitter. We're all just kind of bombarded every day with so many different messages, both commercial messages and personal messages, you know, and then it's all intertwined. You know, if you look in your inbox, you probably have, like, messages from friends and family, and you've also got messages from businesses that you've signed up to hear from and businesses that you've patronized, and you probably also got some other messages you don't want. So you're just overwhelmed, and the more you can just kind of cut through the clutter, the better. And when people describe their businesses, they often kind of focus on features, they focus on descriptions, they focus on kind of what they do. And I think it's much better to focus your business on the benefits or how it actually helps people. And, you know, one of the things that we saw in $100 Startup is we talked to people over and over, the more businesses focused on the question of happiness or the question of improving someone's life, the more successful they would be. And you can you know, create happiness in your business by adding something that's positive or removing something that's negative, you know. So adding something positive is, you know, helping people have a, you know, better day, or, you know, sending people to the spa, or removing something negative is like helping people to get out of debt or to have more free time, you know, or, you know, things like that. So I forget exactly what we said with the 140-character mission statement, but I think it's basically encouraging people to say, you know, okay, when you think about your business, what is that business really about? The frequent flyer guy, he could say his business is about helping people book, you know, plane tickets, and that's fine. That's accurate. It's descriptive. But I think, you know, a better way to describe the business would be I help people take the vacation of their lifetime, you know. And then when you think about that description, you're like, oh, well, of course I would pay $250, you know, or whatever the fee is, you know, to take the vacation of my lifetime or my 10-year anniversary trip or, you know, my first experience to Asia or wherever it is. So the more you focus on benefits and the ultimate question of helpfulness, the better.
Along with that, you've got some great resources at 100startup.com. Including the one-page business plan. We talked about this a little bit ago where you were talking about the old traditional way, which was just it had its time, and there was a process, but it's so outdated now, this concept of going through your massive business plan. You've got this one-page business plan. Why is that the best way to outline your ideas?
You know, again, we're all about simplifying. We're all about, like, making it easy. And as you said, people can get this free on the website. You know, it depends on the kind of business. You know, if you're going to open like a massive factory or something and manufacture, you know, something huge, then of course you're probably going to need, you know, more than a one-page plan. But most of the people that we talk with, as well as probably most of your listeners, they're interested in that question of freedom. They are interested in how can I, you know, start something on the side, or how can I grow my existing business, which may already be, you know, pretty small, and that's great. So again, it's just about focusing on core questions. You know, what's the business? What are you selling? What are you making? Who are the customers? And then there's a couple of extra things you can do that will kind of tweak your business to go a little bit further. Once you're selling something successfully, you know, a natural follow-up question is, what else could I sell? Mm-hmm. You know, if I have these customers that have a need, and I'm obviously meeting this need, I'm able to provide a solution to their problem, is there some other problem they have, you know, that I might also be able to solve? If I've got a product, is there any way I could create a service to help people use that product better? Or if I have a service, if I'm a coach or a consultant, you know, providing some kind of, you know, something that I provide with my time, is there a way I could also create a product, you know, to meet different needs? So after a while, it's just a question of tweaking and continuous improvement. But really, like, from the beginning, it's just, you know, starting with what you have, getting it out to markets. Again, no debt, but also not a lot of time investment in the beginning either. So 30 days to launch.
I love it. Now, we have, at the end of this, we're going to continue on with the extended interview for the folks that come on over to chrislocurto.com. I've got a couple of questions from some of those folks already. One is from Lily Kreitinger. Can you share your favorite success stories of people that have been inspired by the book? You've got incredible stories of folks that, you know, along the way that you wrote the book about, all of that. What have you heard since publishing the book?
That is a great question. We are just now beginning the process of compiling that information. So I now have a form on the website where people are submitting their own success stories of different businesses that have started or businesses that have tweaked. I have heard quite a range of things. I've heard from people who now, you know, just in the past 6 months have started businesses in the $50,000 to $100,000 a year range, which I think is fantastic. And again, I'm glad that we can be a small part in that. I have no doubt that the greatest success of that comes from themselves, you know, of applying their own initiative and momentum to things. But I also hear from a lot of people who, you know, are just kind of beginning to experience this world for the first time, and they haven't, like I said, they haven't gone to business school, and they don't have a background in this, and they are just motivated by freedom. So I also hear from a lot of people who, you know, who have sold something for the first time, or have created their first website, or, you know, received their first client. And one of the common themes that I hear is, you know, when I made that first sale, it was so empowering. You know, when I actually put my artwork online and a stranger came to the website and paid for it, or when I put up my first class that I was teaching, or, you know, whatever product I made, and I made that first sale, that was so exciting. And so I always encourage people to, you know, the sooner you can get to that process, the better. No. So we're beginning to compile all those stories, and I'm hoping for a sequel that will kind of focus more on what other people have done in response to the book.
I love that. There's so much fear involved with starting a business. There's so much, you know, concern. There's so much of the unknown. I love that the first sale is empowering. If you just get it going and you start that, you know, you get that first sale out there, it changes the way you look at being an entrepreneur. This one's from Matt Payton. What is the most significant hurdle for startups, and how have you seen entrepreneurs overcome it?
The most significant hurdle. Thanks, Matt, for the question. I think it kind of depends on the specifics of the business or the context of what kind of business that you're starting. I think in general terms, probably the most significant hurdle is a matter of education, a matter of knowing, okay, what are the next steps to take? Because I think there are a lot of resources out there that are somewhat motivational and, you know, encouraging people to kind of go for it, and I think that's great. It's not a bad thing. But I also think there's a lot of people who are already motivated. There's a lot of people who are already like, yes, I do hate my job. Or even if I don't hate my job, I want some more freedom for myself, but I don't know what to do. And I've heard all about this micro-business movement, but I don't know the practical steps to take. And so I think, you know, one of those hurdles is, okay, what are the next steps, and how do I do this? Where do I go from here? Who are the role models, you know, of people who've gone before, and who are the role models that I can relate to? Because I might hear from one person and think, well, that's great for them, but I don't know how to, you know, apply that to my life. So the more role models, the more diverse, you know, diversification, you know, that we can show, the better. I think another obstacle is fear or uncertainty or just, you know, like I want to make some change in my life, but, you know, I feel hindered in this way. And again, you know, the best way to respond to that is to not let fear make your decisions for you. The best way to respond to it is to move forward quickly and to not say, you know, okay, 3 years from now, I'm going to, you know, do something to create some independence for myself. But, you know, in the next month or two, I'm going to do something, even if it's small, even if I can get to that first sale, because that's ultimately what's going to make the difference for me.
Absolutely. And finally, from AJ, he says, if you have a handful of options, how do you pick one and go for it?
Yeah, I love this question. Thanks, AJ. There's a couple of things. You know, in the book, I have a decision-making matrix, which is a complicated way of saying, you know, kind of a way of evaluating different options. And you basically write down your ideas. You've got these four ideas. Here's idea number one, number two, number three, number four. And you kind of rank them according to a set of priorities in terms of their marketability, in terms of your current interests, in terms of how well these things fit into the other things that you're doing, you know, et cetera. And then you kind of see the total scores and you think, okay, maybe this idea is better than this one, at least for now. I can always go back to the other one later. And that's one way of doing it. Another way to do it is, honestly, when I hear people kind of overwhelmed and say, I've got these four ideas, or I can't choose between them, you know, some of the best advice I ever heard about this was, if you've got these four ideas, just pick one. Just, you know, decide, you know, proceed with one and see how it goes. And if it doesn't work out, then you can go to one of the other ones. But honestly, what happens often is people get paralyzed. And they, you know, look at the four or five options and they never pick anything. So there's a couple of ways you can evaluate, but I do think the most important thing is to pick one of them somehow and then move forward.
No doubt. There's not a whole lot you can do when you're paralyzed, and fear will absolutely do that. Well, Chris, thank you so much for doing this. Can you stick around and do the extended interview for the ChrisLocurto.com readers?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. Thanks, Chris.
Excellent. And folks, if you want to hear that, make sure that you go on over to ChrisLocurto.com. Once again, Chris Guillebeau, thank you for coming and doing this.
Of course. Thank you.
Whew. That is a lot of good information. That is, for so many, I think, of you out there listening, a great perspective. For so many of you that are entrepreneurs and you're going, dang, why did I go get that loan to start my business? And for so many of you that are out there going, there's never going to be a time that I can start a business. I just don't have the money. Hey, folks, you don't have to. You don't have to. Like I said, 60%, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, 60% of businesses started on less than $5,000. Here's a guy who has traveled around and found people who've started on $100 or less and created at least $50,000 a year. You can do this. Becky, what'd you get out of that?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people are asking, you know, how do I turn, you know, this passion into a business? And so what Chris pointed out is that following your passion needs to include creating value, because without the value, your passion is just going to be a hobby. It's going to be a business. So you got to start looking outside of yourself and look at how that passion is going to create value for someone else. And then that's when you can turn that hobby into a business.
It's not just about the passion that you have, because that's not enough.
Right.
It's got to be something that somebody else wants to actually pay for. And if it doesn't have that value, it doesn't matter. So that's a fantastic point. Folks, we hope that you enjoyed that as much as we did. It is that time. Yep, we've got a survey just for you. We want to know what you think. We want to know what you think of the podcast, what you think of the guests, who you would like to hear on this thing, how often you would like to hear all of that information.
You can even tell us if you would like Chris Mefford to ever come back and and be a part of this show again. We miss you, Chris.
Be a part. Make sure that he comes in and shares something funny from a movie from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Or you could submit your titles for what I do, or even Chris Meffords.
There you go. That's right.
We're open. All types of suggestions are welcomed.
We are open. So, folks, make sure that you go to entreleadership.com/podcast survey so that we can hear what you think. And yes, we do need more suggestions for how awesome you are. What other great, awesome names. On top of that, we're going to give away a signed Entree Leadership book to somebody who fills out the survey. So that may be you. You may be getting that signed book in the mail soon. Coming up this Thursday at 9 a.m. Central, we'll be hosting the Entree Leadership Live Chat. Come stop by for an hour to kick off your workday and learn from fellow Entree leaders. Now listen, if you've not done this before, make sure that you come on over. It is an incredible time. It's a great hour of people asking fantastic questions and getting their answers to go and change their leadership. So make sure that you swing by. Did we mention that it's completely free? Yep, it sure is. Go to DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership this Thursday and join in on the discussion. Reminders, follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership or at Chris Locurdo, or email us at podcast@EntreeLeadership.com. And for daily leadership, make sure that you go to ChrisLocurdo.com and subscribe. Don't forget to head over to the business section of DaveRamsey.com and sign up for our monthly newsletter. It is free. It's all good information as well. And if you want to hear more from Dave, more teaching from Dave, plan to attend one of our Entree Leadership Live events. We have got the Entree Leadership Master Series that is coming up from May 5th through 11th here in Nashville at our headquarters. And let me tell you, that is going to be an absolute blast. Well, that puts another episode of the Entree Leadership Podcast in the books. I hope that you guys enjoyed this as much as we enjoy making it, because let me tell you, we do. And I can tell you by looking at Colin in the studio, he's just giddy. He's giddy right now. Yes. So let me thank the folks who make this happen every single time. Chris Mafford, our executive producer. Colin Fatke, our giddy audio engineer.
Sure, he really appreciates that.
Oh, yes, he does.
He really wishes he had a mic right now.
Yes, he does. Becky Powell, our just genius of everything and producer. Chris Guillebeau for joining us today. And, of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, take this information out there. Change your leadership, change your business, and change your life. Make sure that you join us on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.